KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass. And KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This program was brought to you by Jim and Shirley Brown's Apartments, located in Sandpoint above Trident Seafoods and the Boat Harbor, featuring two-bedroom apartments on a month-to-month basis. For more information, call Jim Brown at 386-6050.
Three little birds sat on my window, and they told me I don't need to worry. Summer came like cinnamon, so sweet. Little girls double dutch on the concrete. Maybe sometimes we got it wrong, but it's alright. The more things seem to change, the more they stay the same. Don't you hesitate, girl, put your records on. Tell me your favorite song. Yeah, go ahead, let your head down. Sapphire and faded jeans, I hope you get your dreams. Just go ahead, let your head down. You're gonna find yourself somewhere, somehow.
Blue as the sky, sunburnt and lonely, sipping tea in the bar by the roadside. Don't you let those other boys fool you. Gotta love that afro head.
Boy said, I should be in my recliner, whiskey typing up one-liners, crying, trying to get you back. Yeah, I know how that country song goes. I'm supposed to be hard, bro. This town don't stand a chance.
as high. One part of my plan wasn't even gonna try, but I got a beer in my hand. The band's playing David Lee Murphy. Party crowd is party 30. Lordy mercy, I'm feeling good. About the deer stand, feeling this high. One part of my plan wasn't even gonna try.
In my boots, so I had to pick for the uptown type. Yeah, but we talked for a while in a corner booth before closing time. She caught me by surprise. She said, "Give me a dirt road, the window's down. You wanna get lost on the edge of town in a Chevrolet." Packs of Brooks and Dunn. If you want a country girl, you just found one. Let's slip away. Yeah, in a Chevrolet. I think I feel in love right then and there. We were out the door before the end of the song. Where to? She said, "I don't care. Just don't take me home. What you waiting on? Just give me a dirt road, the windows down. You wanna get lost on the edge of town in a Chevrolet." She said, "Give me six packs of Brooks and Dunn. If you want a country girl, you just found one. Let's slip away." Yeah. Girl like her. windows down, wanna get lost on the edge of town in a Chevrolet.
Your Chevrolet.
She said, give me six packs of Brooks and Dunn. If you want a country girl, you just found one. Let's slip away.
Shipped me off in a motorcade. They said, boy, you're gonna fight a war. You don't even know what you're fighting for. I lost friends in the August heat. At night it was God I had always meet. I said, Lord, won't you bring me home? I got women in the West I wanna hold. You in a waiting room after sleeping there for a week or two. Doctor said he did all he could. You were the last thing I had that was good. So I walked miles on the Tulsa streets. Lights started beaming in from the east. 6 a.m. and fucked up again, asking God where the hell he'd been. He said the sun's gonna rise tomorrow, somewhere on the east side of sorrow. You better pack your bags west, stick out your chest and then hit the road. The sun's gonna rise tomorrow, somewhere on the east side of sorrow. Don't give it a reason to follow, let it be, then let it go. Brother lost his mind in the city last fall. Was it his blood or his conscience or the alcohol? Did the Navy do him well? Or did he wind up sick like every other brave boy from these rundown sticks? You ever get tired of singing songs like all your pain is just another fucking sing-along? If you ever get the time, come on home. I have Turnbox back together and they're writing songs. He said the sun's gonna rise tomorrow, somewhere on the east side of sorrow. You better pack your bags west, stick out your chest and then hit the road. Side of sorrow, don't give it a reason to follow. Let it be, then let it go. Let it be, then let it go.
Time now for the fish report here on KSTP. We have harvest summaries for the Alaska Peninsula as well as escapement reports. We'll look over at Bristle Bay and see how things are going there for this time this year, and go into the Wayback Machine just by 1 year and see what fishing looked like this time last year. Let's go ahead and start with the harvest summary for the Alaska Peninsula for the 20th of June 2025. The harvest for yesterday across the area was 8,000 sockeye for a total of 326,000 to date. And no new notable returns in terms of harvest for coho, pinks, or chums for yesterday. 2,000 sockeye were delivered in the Shumigan Islands yesterday for a total of 56,000 to date. And 1,000 were delivered over in Unimak for a total of 245,000 to date. Nelson Lagoon delivered 4,000 sockeye yesterday for a total of 20,500 to date. And our first big push of deliveries in Port Muller to Outer Port Hyden wasn't a large number, but the first big notice, 4,800 fish in Port Muller to Outer Port Hyden delivered yesterday, June the 20th, 2025. As promised, looking back in time to this time last year, by this time last year, 170,000 sockeye had been harvested in the Shumigan Islands. Again, this time, so far this year, 56,000 have been harvested. 206,000 have been harvested and delivered in Unimak, so that this time last year was less than what we have by this year. Nelson Lagoon had 3,000 by this time last year. Right now, they're at 20,000. And Port Muller to Outer Port Hyden had not seen any fish delivered by this time last year. Looking now to the Alaska Peninsula Escapement Report, 10,000 sockeye escaped at the weir yesterday in Chignik. They're at 120,000 to date. 1,500 of those are counted as late-run sockeye. And again, this is actually starting to catch up now with 2016, which was at 147,000 by this time. Nelson River continuing its strong return, 13,000 fish at the weir yesterday. They're at 47,000, and that is dwarfing any year in the last 10. The last year that was highest was 9,300, which was in 2023. The Bear River had 2,000 at the weir yesterday. They're at 9,700, which is upper end of the midpoint still. Ilnik had 2,900 for a total of 14,000, and that's at the middle point, but kind of on the lower end of the middle point for the Ilnik River. 60 in Orzinski, they're at 568, which is well ahead of any year in the last 10. 2023 had 85 fish by this point, and nothing new over at the Ilyuk. They were flooded with high water. Looking at the Bristol Bay reports, a total of 34,000 fish were delivered in Bristol Bay yesterday. They do have openings coming up, though. They're at 348,000. The Ugashik had 31,000 for a total now of 126,000. 2,200 over at Naknek for a total of 36,000. And nothing in the other rivers. The Egigik's at 183,000 total, and Togiak is at 1,700. And Nushagik has not had any deliveries yet so far this season. That does it for the fish report. This report was brought to you by Heliostar. Stay tuned for more great programming coming up on KSDP.
You're listening to 88.1 FM in King Cove, Alaska.
You are tuned into 830 AM KSDP Radio, 88.1 FM K201 DA in King Cove, Alaska, 88.1 KFPS Falls Pass, Alaska.
Funding for KSDP is made possible in part by the King Cove Corporation, operating the Fleets, Inn Hotel, the Heart Lakes Apartments, and the Last Hook Off Tavern. The King Cove Corporation is a proud sponsor of KSDP.
KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
Time now for the fish report here on KSDP. We have harvest summaries for the Alaska Peninsula as well as escapement reports. We'll look over at Bristol Bay and see how things are going there for this time this year and go into the Wayback Machine just by 1 year and see what fishing looked like this time last year. Let's go ahead and start with the harvest summary for the Alaska Peninsula for the 20th of June 2025. The harvest for yesterday across the area was 8,000 sockeye for a total of 326,000 to date, and no new notable returns in terms of harvest for coho, pinks, or chums for yesterday. 2,000 sockeye were delivered in the Shumigan Islands yesterday for a total of 56,000 to date, and 1,000 were delivered over in Unimak for a total of 245,000 to date. Nelson Lagoon delivered 4,000 sockeye yesterday for a total of 20,500 to date. And our first big push of deliveries in Port Muller to Outer Port Hyden wasn't a large number, but the first big Notice 4,800 fish in Port Mueller to Outer Port Hyden delivered yesterday, June the 20th, 2025. As promised, looking back in time to this time last year, by this time last year, 170,000 sockeye had been harvested in the Shumgin Islands. Again, this time so far this year, 56,000 have been harvested. 206,000 had been harvested and delivered in Unimak, so that this time last year was less than what we have by this year. Nelson Lagoon had 3,000 by this time last year. Right now they're at 20,000. And Port Mueller to Outer Port Hyden had not seen any fish delivered by this time last year. Looking now to the Alaska Peninsula Escapement Report, 10,000 sockeye escaped the weir yesterday in Chignik. They're at 120,000 to date. 1,500 of those are counted as late-run sockeye. And again, this is actually starting to catch up now with 2016, which was at 147,000 by this time. Nelson River continuing its strong return, 13,000 fish up the weir yesterday. They're at 47,000, and that is dwarfing any year in the last 10. The last year that was highest was 9,300, which was in 2023. The Bear River had 2,000 up the weir yesterday. They're at 9,700, which is upper end of the midpoint still. Ilnik had 2,900 for a total of 14,000, and that's at the middle point, but kind of on the lower end of the middle point for the Ilnik River. 60 in Orzinski, they're at 568, which is well ahead of any year in the last 10. 2023 had 85 fish by this point, and nothing new over at the Ilyuk. They were flooded with high water. Looking at the Bristol Bay reports, a total of 34,000 fish were delivered in Bristol Bay yesterday. They do have openings coming up, though. They're at 348,000. The Ugashik had 31,000 for a total now of 126,000. 2,200 over at Naknek for a total of 36,000. And nothing in the other rivers. The Egigik's at 183,000 total, and Togiak is at 1,700. And Nushagik has not had any deliveries yet so far this season. That does it for the Fish Report. This report was brought to you by Heliostar. Stay tuned for more great programming coming up on KSDP.
Three little birds sat on my window, and they told me I don't need to worry. Summer came like cinnamon, so sweet. Little girls double dutch on the concrete. Maybe sometimes we got it wrong, but it's alright. The more things seem to change, the more they stay the same. Don't you hesitate, girl, put your records on. Tell me your favorite song. Yeah, go ahead, let your head down. Sapphire and faded jeans, I hope you get your dreams. Just go ahead, let your head down. You're gonna find yourself somewhere, somehow.
Blue as the sky, sunburnt and lonely, sipping tea in the bar by the roadside. Don't you let those other boys fool you. Gotta love that afro head.
Kept me awake. I thought that I was stronger. When you're gonna realize that you don't even have to try any longer. Do what you want to, girl, put your records on.
To kill your middle finger, rearview mirror, supposed to make a country boy sad. I should be in my recliner, whiskey typing up one-liners, crying, trying to get you back. Yeah, I know how that country song goes. I'm supposed to be hard, bro. All night, country done came to town. This town don't stand a chance. I holler at the ladies, dancing like crazy. New Luke Casey's fresh up out the deer stand. Feeling this high wasn't part of my plan. Wasn't even gonna try, but I got a beer in my hand. The band's playing David Lee Murphy. Party crowd is party 30. I'm feeling good, and I'm betting you're betting that I'm a wrecking you reckon. I call you up in a second, and I would, but I got a beer in my hand, and I got it raised up high. I ain't got it given my damn right. I can do this all night. Country done came to town. This town don't stand a chance. I holler at the ladies dancing like crazy. New Luke Casey's fresh up out the deer stand. Feeling this high wasn't part of my plan. Wasn't even gonna try.
Kill, I was in my booth.
so I had to pick for the uptown time. Yeah, but we talked for a while in a corner booth before closing time. She caught me by surprise. She said, give me a dirt road, the window's down. You wanna get lost on the edge of town in a Chevrolet. She said, give me a six pack, some Brooks and Dunn. If you want a country girl, you just found one. Let's slip away. Yeah, in a Chevrolet. I think I feel in love right then and there. We were out the door before the end of the song. I said, where to? She said, I don't care. Just don't take me home. What you waiting on? Just give me a dirt road, the window's down. You wanna get lost on the edge of town. Chevrolet. She said, give me a six pack, some Brooks and Dunn. If you want a country girl, you just found one. Let's slip away. Yeah, in your Chevrolet. Let's ride. The windows down, wanna get lost on the edge of town in a Chevrolet. She said, give me a six pack, some Brooks and Dunn. If you want a country girl, you just found one. Let's slip away.
Old, full of hate. They shipped me off in a motorcade. They said, boy, you're gonna fight a war. You don't even know what you're fighting for. I lost friends in the August heat. That night it was God I had always meet. I said, Lord, won't you bring me home? I got women in the West I wanna hold. You in a waiting room after sleeping there for a week or two. Doctor said he did all he could. You were the last thing I had that was good. So I walked miles on the Tulsa streets. Lights started beaming in from the east. 6 a.m. and fucked up again. Asking God where the hell he'd been. He said the sun's gonna rise tomorrow, somewhere on the east side of sorrow. You better pack your bags west, stick out your chest and then hit the road. The sun's gonna rise tomorrow, somewhere on the east side of sorrow. Don't give it a reason to follow, let it be, then let it go. Brother lost his mind in the city last fall. Was it his blood or his conscience or the alcohol?
to the Navy doing well, or did he wind up sick like every other brave boy from these rundown sticks? You ever get tired of singing songs like all your pain is just another fucking sing-along? If you ever get the time, come on home. I have turnbox back together and they're writing songs. He said the sun's gonna rise tomorrow, somewhere on the east side of sorrow. You better pack your bags, let's stick out your chest and then hit the road. Side of sorrow, don't give it a reason to follow. Let it be, then let it go. Let it be, then let it go.
You're listening to 8:30 a.m. KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska.
You are listening to KSDP Radio, 8:30 a.m. Sandpoint. 88.1 FM on translator K21DA, King Cove, Alaska.
You are listening to 830 AM KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska.
KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
Time now for the fish report here on KSDP. We have harvest summaries for the Alaska Peninsula as well as escapement reports. We'll look over at Bristol Bay and see how things are going there for this time this year, and go into the Wayback Machine just by 1 year and see what fishing looked like this time last year. Let's go ahead and start with the harvest summary for the Alaska Peninsula for the 20th of June 2025. The harvest for yesterday across the area was 8,000 sockeye for a total of 326,000 to date, and no new notable returns in terms of harvest for coho, pinks, or chums for yesterday. 2,000 sockeye were delivered in the Shumigan Islands yesterday for a total of 56,000 to date. And 1,000 were delivered over in Unimak for a total of 245,000 to date. Nelson Lagoon delivered 4,000 sockeye yesterday for a total of 20,500 to date. And our first big push of deliveries in Port Muller to out of Port Hyden wasn't a large number, but the first big notice, 4,800 fish in Port Muller to out of Port Hyden delivered yesterday, June the 20th, 2025. As promised, looking back in time to this time last year, by this time last year, 170,000 sockeye had been harvested in the Shumigan Islands. Again, this time, so far this year, 56,000 have been harvested. 206,000 had been harvested and delivered in Unimak, so that this time last year was less than what we have by this year. Nelson Lagoon had 3,000 by this time last year. Right now they're at 20,000. And Port Muller to Outer Port Hyden had not seen any fish delivered by this time last year. Looking now to the Alaska Peninsula escapement report, 10,000 sockeye escaped at the weir yesterday in Chignik. They're at 120,000 to date. 1,500 of those are counted as late-run sockeye. And again, this is actually starting to catch up now with 2016, which was at 147,000 by this time. Nelson River continuing its strong return, 13,000 fish at the weir yesterday. They're at 47,000, and that is dwarfing any year in the last 10. The last year that was highest was 9,300, which was in 2023. The Bear River had 2,000 at the weir yesterday. They're at 9,700, which is upper end of the midpoint still. Ilnik had 2,900 for a total of 14,000, and that's at the middle point, but kind of on the lower end of the middle point for the Ilnik River. 60 in Orzinski, they're at 568, which is well ahead of any year in the last 10. 2023 had 85 fish by this point, and nothing new over at the Ilyuk. They were flooded with high water. Looking at the Bristol Bay report, a total of 34,000 fish were delivered in Bristol Bay yesterday. They do have openings coming up, though. They're at 348,000. The Ugashik had 31,000 for a total now of 126,000. 2,200 over at Naknek for a total of 36,000. And nothing in the other rivers. The Egigik's at 183,000 total, and Togiak is at 1,700. And Nushagik has not had any deliveries yet so far this season. That does it for the fish report. This report was brought to you by Heliostar. Stay tuned for more great programming coming up on KSDP.
I'm a paleo nerd. I'm a paleo nerd. I'm a paleo nerd. Don't you understand? I'm a paleo nerd.
Hey, Ray.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You went on a little adventure, didn't you? On a boat?
Oh, man. Yeah. Almost 2 weeks on a boat in the North Pacific off the coast of northern southeast Alaska.
Wow. So it's really South Alaska, the Gulf of Alaska, right?
Yeah, it's the Gulf of Alaska. I get confused. Northern, southeast, yes, southern, northern.
And was this a rowboat or a little skiff?
It was an Army T-boat, about 78 feet long.
Wow.
There were six of us on board, and three of them were paleontologists.
Really?
And
Dr. Kirk Johnson was on that trip with you.
That's right. Paul Murphy and Jason Hicks. They are paleontologists, and I guess I'm a paleontologist, right?
Of course you are. Of course you are. What did you discover? Did you
they
find
actually
any cool
told
fossils?
Me. They told me I was a paleontologist, too.
We found, wait, hold on a second. Back in the Karen Shin episode, I believe, we determined that you are not only a coprolite holder, but you're also a paleontologist.
Oh, I got a lot of coprolites in my head is what I got, man, but in my britches. But anyways, I could talk paleo with the best of them, I guess. But it was great. We did find some cool stuff. TBD.
Like?
TBD.
Still okay.
Couple of mystery
Give me
fossils.
A hint.
Mystery fossils. One of them is like we have no idea what it is, man. So Kirk is asking.
Is it a shell? Is it a stick? Is it a piece of what is it?
It's in marine sediment, so
right.
It's in a concretion.
Right.
So we found concretions. We found crab concretions along the way. We found many clams and
the
you know,
mystery fossil
snails.
Is it? A shell?
It kind of looks like a shell, but it looks like maybe a sea urchin or maybe a sea fan sort of bryozoan.
And how old is this sediment?
We were basically an Eocene or Oligocene rocks along the coast there. So we were hoping to bump into a marine mammal. But
So we're talking 47 to 28 million years ago.
Yeah, 30-ish million years ago.
Wow, yeah. That's a long time.
It's a long, long time, and a long time to be on a boat
I've been
five
pondering.
Other guys, but it was great. I slept in the wheelhouse.
Yeah, I know, because of your snoring.
My terrible
Your
snoring.
Indomitable snoring.
It has been compared to a dying Albertosaurus, is what I sound like. But anyways, go ahead. Yes?
I've been contemplating time. Deep time,
what?
Short time. Well, my son went to college. I'm an empty nester, so I have a lot of time now. And I'm reevaluating my time. My dog passed away. I walked the halls of my empty house, lonely and sad. But I'm able to ponder time. And I was thinking that we humans probably had the ability to create our own fire 200,000 years ago. The cave paintings at Lascaux in Europe are like 40,000 years ago.
Some of them are, yeah, 40,000.
Australian Aborigines possibly transferred from Java, Indonesia, to the Australian continent 70, 80,000 years ago. And then you just said you were in Eocene sediment 30 million years ago. Do you know how many periods of 200,000 years that is? That is so, so long ago, right? And then when you think about the Permian, when was the Permian?
250 million years ago.
It's how many 200,000 year segments is that? So
it's mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing.
Our lives are so insignificant. We were in mostly Oligocene rocks, though. They're 30 million years-ish.
Right.
But yeah, Eocene is more like 50, Dave. But anyways, I can't help myself. It was great. We found cool stuff, a lot of camaraderie, and perhaps an episode will come out of it.
Cool.
And Dr. Johnson says he loves our show, and he'd like to be back on with us sometime.
Who? Dr.
That
Johnson?
Kirk guy. Dr. Johnson.
He's the one that has the one-shot vaccine? Oh, no, sorry. That's Johnson and Johnson.
That's right. I got my two, and I'm looking for a third, man. Yeah. But I talked to my pharmacist. He said he can't hook me up until later.
Yeah. Well, I got my one, and I'll probably get a booster later. But anyway, who is our guest today? We have an amazing, someone you know, and someone who has worked with Pat Druckenmiller, who's up in Fairbanks.
Yes, that's right. We talked about Greg Erickson a few episodes ago. We mentioned that we might have him on, and he's on.
Today.
It's kind of odd because he's at Florida State University, but he studies polar dinosaurs, and he's been going up to the Colville River.
Wait,
I went with him.
He studies everything.
In Alaska. Well, he studies everything.
He studies crocodilians, and there are crocodilians in Florida. So,
yeah, right. And I know that you'd be excited about his crocodile work, having you had your terrifying crocodile experience
in
Australia.
I won't bring that up, but, you know, he did do these bite meters, and we'll talk about it with him.
And
about,
I'm
He captured the most pounds per square inch of any land animal. He holds that record of actually getting that croc to bite it. But
yeah,
we'll talk
to
him about that. It's pretty crazy.
It's pretty cool. And, you know, I went to the Colville River with him, and we'll ask him about some of the adventures. Yeah, he was.
Oh, that was you, Kirk? Was that you, Kirk, and Greg?
Yeah, Greg Erickson, Pat Druckenmiller.
Was there too?
Yeah, and another fellow by the name of Kevin May, so who's quite
fantastic. All right, well, let's get into it.
We have adventures.
Let's talk to him and get into it and dial up, and let's talk to Greg Erickson, who is.
Let's talk to him. Yeah, well, he's down in Florida, and I'll introduce him to you.
Great.
Hey, Dave, meet Greg Erickson, professor of anatomy and vertebrate paleobiology at Florida State University. He's also the curator at the Florida State University Biological Science Museum and the co-director of the Arctic Paleontological Research Consortium. Greg, it is so cool to see you again, man. It's been like 9 years, I think, coming up on 10 years since we had adventures way up north a long time ago.
Yeah. No, it's great to see you. You haven't aged a bit, so you're well-preserved.
Nor you, sir.
I'm good. You're well-preserved, as we say in my field. And David, nice to meet you.
My pleasure, Greg. Yeah, I've read, my God, you've done so many different studies from crocodilians to hadrosaurs. It's amazing. But the question is, Greg, are you a paleo nerd?
Fess up, dude.
He paused.
I was asking my wife about that. Am I a nerd? I guess I am at some level, yes. Do I love paleo? Absolutely.
Okay.
I think I just barely qualify.
Two together there. So you are a paleo nerd.
I'm a paleo nerd, yes. I don't want to admit it.
Yeah, we spent almost a week in the Colville River all those years ago. But, you know, I didn't ask you a lot about your childhood. Where did this nerddom start? Where did you grow up?
I was born in Anchorage, Alaska. My dad was the regional director of fish and wildlife in Anchorage. So, and he was an expert on bears. So I grew up catching bears and things like that. So,
what?
What
year did you graduate high school?
I mostly grew up in Seattle ultimately.
Right.
But, he ended up being a professor at University of Washington. And
what years were you in Anchorage?
Just when I was little,
so we're talking the 30s and 40s.
Back in the Pleistocene. But yeah, I had forgotten that you're a fellow Alaskan, really. You were born here.
Yes, I am.
And then when I was reading, you have the rare opportunity to have had a polar bear as a pet. I read about Snowflake.
Yes.
What?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so my dad, rescued a polar bear that the mom, I can't remember, it was either the mom wasn't feeding it at a zoo or the mom got shot. I can't remember. I was only three. But we had a pet polar bear named Snowflake, and my father had done some work in his master's figuring out what you could add to cow's milk. He worked with a chemist to make it so you could still feed a baby bear and have it live in a zoo or whatnot. And we had this bear for about 6 months, and then
at the house
we went out
in your home, yeah,
yes, sir. And then we went out to dinner, I guess, one night and came back and it had torn off all the cabinets of our entire house.
Oh, my goodness.
And so my mom said the bear's got to go. And so ultimately it went to a zoo in Canada, and it was there like 22 years later still or something like that. I need to look up whatever happened to Snowflake.
Well, you don't want to have a pet chimpanzee. They tear off other things.
Well, our cat was a bobcat. So we had a bobcat.
What?
And a,
what?
Yeah, so we had a bobcat, a Springer Spaniel, and a polar bear. So I'm not making this up.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Wow. So, but you eventually, you ended up down in Seattle. And like I said, I've been reading some of your bio. And you then were, you eventually went to UW, right? As
yes, sir.
An engineering student?
No, I was a geology major.
So, okay.
That's basically where I got introduced to, I mean, as a kid, I always liked dinosaurs and fossils and things like that.
Ah, so you are a paleo nerd. He is, he is.
It just got rekindled. So my undergrad advisor was John Rensberger, a mammal paleontologist.
Oh, yeah.
He took me under his wings and took me out in the field. And, he picked up on the fact that I had a lot of knowledge about biology from being my dad's kid. And then I had engineering interests. I started off as an aeronautical engineering major. And he just said, you could really make an impact in this field if you put, you know, that kind of integration together. And so he encouraged me to do it. I ignored him. and I was a construction worker for about a year and a half trying to figure out what to do. And I got tired of getting rained on, and I decided I'm going to go take the GRE. And so I got into grad school, and I became Jack Horner's grad student at Montana State.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I did my master's there, and then I went to Berkeley in integrated biology. And then ultimately, I was a postdoc in bioengineering at Stanford. So in the end, I kind of did all the things I wanted to do. I get to work on animals, I work on fossils, and I do engineering.
Wow. So the dinosaur moment happened. I mean, you weren't really a paleo freak as a kid. You loved dinosaurs, as all kids do, but it wasn't until, you know, you were in this, you took a geology class, and somewhere it says that you also went out and found a Triceratops skull during a class in your junior year.
Yeah, that was with Dr. Rensberger. Yeah. No, I was definitely a paleo nerd till I was about 12 years of age.
Okay.
And then I got interested in other things. I wanted to be a pilot, things like that. But I always had an interest in fossils and geology. So that's why I got a geology degree. And I just didn't think it was possible to get a job in this field. And Dr. Rensberger, you know, really encouraged me. And thank God he did. I wouldn't be talking to you right now if it wasn't for John. So,
that's cool.
So what is this Triceratops skull? How complete was it?
The skull was about 60% complete. It's at the Burke Museum now. So we dug that up when I went out. He took me out in the field, and I found that. We dug it up. So that was really my first real expedition.
Do you know, gentlemen, there's a Triceratops that is on the auction block, I think, today.
Yeah, I saw that.
So I don't have $1.6 million to bid for it.
Mm. Yeah, they are fairly common, and they are found on private land, so it is possible to buy one. But Jack Horner got you thinking about stuff. You got your PhD there you got your PhD later at Berkeley, but you were working with Jack. So somewhere in there, this idea of trying to figure out how old dinosaurs were, and you ended up aging a T-Rex, right? That was
yes,
the big turn?
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, so Jack had this, one of his mottos was he wasn't really interested in how the dinosaurs died. Everybody was really interested in the extinction of dinosaurs. And he said he didn't really care about that. He just wanted to know how they lived. And I like that, you know, trying to bring dinosaurs to life. And so he really instilled that in me. You know, one of the big mysteries was how old dinosaurs were. Their growth rates, these sorts of things, which are also pertinent to their physiology, whether they're warm-blooded or cold-blooded. So ultimately, I got permission to cut up Sue. So this is the $8.65 million Tyrannosaur that the Field Museum had. And so I told them I thought I could age it. And they, after about 6 months of debating among the curators, they decided to let me give it a shot. And so, yeah, we figured out, you know, Tyrannosaurus probably only lived about 30 years of age.
But from what bone did you pull the histology from, the little section?
There was a bunch of pieces, parts of the, some of the ribs, part of the pubis, one of the hip bones, fibula.
Is there a better bone that you can see the growth rings of a skeleton?
Yeah, I think the pubis is good, one of the hip bones, and then the fibula, which is, you know, the shin bone on the side of your shin. Those are bones that are not hollowed out. So carnivorous dinosaurs have hollowed out bones developmentally, so they erase the growth lines. So I found some of these bones, like the ribs and the pubis and the fibula, and the fibula in particular is really good, that basically recorded the entire history of the animal.
Are they like growth rings? Wow. Can you see in like a tree, like 1 year, 2 year, just a matter of counting them? Or
yeah, it's very much like aging a tree. It takes a lot of work to get the get a microscope slide that shows that. But yes, it's sort of easy, but not bad.
Did you use an extant animal as a comparative anatomy to look at the growth rings?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I tested the method on alligators that I knew the age of and showed that those bones were perfectly fine. Up till then, people were cutting the femur, the thigh bone, but that's really hollow on a tyrannosaur, so it's most of the growth lines are gone. So I was able to show that some of these other bones work as effectively. And that was really the breakthrough that allowed us to figure out how T-Rex grew up. And the findings were fascinating. I mean, when I started the study, people thought Tyrannosaurus rex, lived to 200 years or something like that. And so it kind of just put it in context with living animals. It put on about 5.5 pounds of mass per day, which
per day.
Basically shows that, yeah, so it shows
what?
Like, yeah, so it shows the Atkins diet doesn't work.
But you're talking about a 3,000-pound individual? How much would a T-Rex have weighed?
Oh, maybe 15,000
like
pounds.
Sue.
About 15,000.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sue would have been 15,000 all fleshed out with a full stomach.
Yeah, it was a 15,000-pound roadrunner from hell.
Beep, beep. Roadrunner from hell. I love it, man. Yeah, wow. Such a big beast. So you turned your attention then to other dinosaurs. And, when I first met you, you were introduced to me as, well, the guy knows a lot about T-Rex histology and how the growth rates, but also as the duck-billed dinosaur guy. You tumbled into the world of hadrosaurs, the duck-billed dinosaurs. Did you apply the same growth rate curiosity to those beasts as well?
Yes and no. It was kind of funny when I was Jack Horner's graduate student. He loved duck-billed dinosaurs. He just like, I want to go find a duck. I don't want to find a tyrannosaur, And so I pretended I wasn't interested in them, but which isn't true. I'm fascinated with their dentition. These animals had 1,400 teeth in their jaws, and I was interested in how they, why did they have so many teeth? And so I was able, from growth lines, daily growth lines, to figure out how rapidly they shed their teeth.
Teeth growth line.
Yeah, there's daily growth lines in the teeth, and you can count those up, and you can figure out how long it took the tooth to develop. If you look at the replacement tooth behind, you get the replacement rate. Once you have that, you can also figure out the wear rate. So they're wearing down their teeth at about a millimeter a day. So I've just been really fascinated by their dentition more than their growth.
I'm curious about that, the tooth batteries themselves. So all these lines of teeth are moving. Do they actually shed the teeth? Or do they just wear them down and they're gone and the next one moves in?
Yeah, so at each tooth position, they shed a tooth about every 50 to 80 days. And so I think I calculated one time that they put out about 3,300 teeth per year. So, I mean, back in the Cretaceous, the tooth fairy was completely broke.
Well, I have a question. So if they're shedding a millimeter of dentition a day, wouldn't that be represented in the coprolites of those animals? That type, that maybe calcium or some sort of teeth material? I mean, obviously it would be like a paste. It wouldn't be chunks of teeth. It would be, right?
They were shedding the teeth, so they probably didn't end up in their body. So the fecal matter.
But you're saying it ground down a millimeter a day. So they're using plant material to grind down their teeth.
Yes.
So that would be several ounces or a pound of pulverized tooth material with the plant they're eating. Would that be representational in the coprolite?
Yeah. Yes. So some of the calcium and phosphate would end up in the fecal matter, although it wouldn't look like teeth.
Of course.
But they'd eventually shed a plug of their tooth. Just the root of it would shed. And so we find hundreds, if not thousands, of shed teeth when we're out in the field.
I remember when we landed on the Colville River and we started walking along the riverbank. It wasn't too long before you actually picked up a chunk of hadrosaur jaw and showed that to me. And I have a picture of you doing that. You held it up to me. But it's a whole row. Would those entire rows fall out at one time? Would they shed like a row?
They look like mammoth. They look like little miniature mammoth teeth, but not...
Well,